Whoa. Sorry, everyone. We don't have a special guest on this week. It's just Spence and Buzz. And sorry, Spence and Buzz, but the producer told me that, unfortunately, you guys don't get a special intro. You know, it's a network decision, not mine. I'm sorry. But everyone, back to our regularly scheduled programming. Welcome to another episode of the Whiskey and Watches podcast. On this week's episode, Spence and Buzz sit down to discuss milestone watches, and also something about some cool new hats. So get ready and sit back, because it's time for another episode of the Whiskey and Watches podcast.
Welcome everybody to episode 76 of the Whiskey and Watches podcast. It's just Spence and Buzzy tonight. Spangler's still riding high off of that that introduction he gave to Cole. He's going to be talking about that for the next 3 or 4 weeks, I'm sure. He may have even done a fun introduction as a joke for this one. We're not sure. Haven't talked to him. He's driving back from the southern part of the United States, so good for him. Google was estimating his arrival time in Central Time, not Eastern Time, so he was about an hour off on when he thought he'd make it. It is what it is. Not a big deal. We forgive him, right, Buzzy?
That's why you got old Mr. Reliable, the Buzzmeister, in co-host chair number one.
Yep.
Because
that's
classic mix up. Central time instead of Eastern.
Sorry. Wish there was a top button on this. That second beverage was a little bit stronger than I was expecting.
I guess so.
Tough to get the mix. Well, I'll just go ahead and start with the usual wrist check, drink check, since I'm coughing on the drink. I decided to mix myself what somebody has informed me is known as a high school friends, which is the non-slushy version of the slushy that I had at Hotel Covington before our first Red Bar meetup, which I don't have any of the additional ingredients, but it's largely just Old Forester bourbon and 50 West hard lemonade beer, which is from 50 West Brewery here right by my house. Which is actually decently hard to find, the hard lemonade. It's been very popular, and it's not anywhere near as sweet as like a Mike's hard lemonade. They call it a hard lemonade beer, so it's like they brew it. I don't know how to describe it. It's really good. It's a great summer drink. You throw some whiskey in it, make it even more alcoholic. And the problem is I'm mixing it in a coffee tumbler or a Yeti, and I didn't bring a spoon down. So I'm just kind of like a little bit. And this one, a little bit more Old Forester than that first one. So it's, and it was a little bit more towards the top. So a little bit of a surprise there.
There you go. So is this like a classy version of your new love, the Natterday?
No, but kind of, because Natterday. So the way I'll explain this to people have been knocking me for the Natterdays, except the guys from 40 and 20 who they get it. So I bought the wrong thing by accident. So last summer, our mutual friend Susie brought over the Natty Light seltzers. And I thought they were called Natterdays. So I asked the guy at the drive-thru beer shop, do you have Natterdays? And he said, yes. So I bought them. And I was like, well, this is close enough. Anybody's ever had Leinenkugel's Summer Shandy or Grapefruit Shandy, anything like any of the Shandy beers that are like the good ones, not the ones that are like overly syrupy, because that's weird. That like Natterdays I put up against them in a weird way. Like it's very light. It's very drinkable. It has the Shandy flavor, but it also has the beer. And it's like, I'm not a big fan of Natty Light in general, but this hits the spot on a hot day after you're mowing the lawn, and it's significantly cheaper than Leinenkugel's. So more money for watches. There you go.
So would you say, have you joined the Church of Natterday Saints?
You've been waiting on that one, haven't you? I can tell by the look on your face. You've been waiting for that one. That was pretty good.
Well, it's funny. It's funny because I actually just came up with that one when I made a reference to Natterdays at the beginning. I actually was not waiting all that long.
Okay.
But once that popped into my head, boy, I was excited. Boy, I could not wait.
I can imagine. Couldn't wait long enough. And then as some of you may have seen on the wrist today, I did actually made a bit of a move, took a new position, exciting new opportunity. So started a new job today. So of course, since it's the first day, I had to wear the El Primero. So got the El Primero, the now discontinued, Chronomaster 38 millimeter. I've raved about it before, so I'll save it a little bit, but this one just wears so stinking well. I absolutely love it. So yep, that's what's on the wrist today. What about you, Buzzy? We'll get to these in a second.
Yeah, agreed. Agreed. Okay. I'm not drinking a Natterday. It's a sad thing. It's Monday. It's not Natterday. But I am drinking Paddy's Irish Whiskey on the rocks tonight. I bought this bottle many months ago. And in the interim, my palate has been so refined by all sorts of delicious whiskeys. It's really gone through adolescence into a just full grown palate capable of drinking whiskeys that are finer than this. But it's definitely the praise that I had for it before, it's muted right now. It definitely seems less good than when I opened it. But you know what? If you're putting a whiskey on rocks, this is still a perfectly fine one to sip. It's nobody's fancy whiskey, but darn it, it's good enough. On my wrist, why do you even ask? Medoxa, it's been seeing an awful lot of wrist time. And, I need to switch it up. I just haven't been. It's wound up. The time is always correct. I don't have to adjust it at all. It runs really darn close to the true time. Like, far better than just a stock unregulated movement should.
How's the date doing since June only has 30 days?
Yeah, I did that to switch that forward, but other than that, we're doing good.
Wasn't the watch's fault. You're not going to have that problem for the next 2 months.
Thank God, huh? All right.
We have some new additions to talk about.
Yeah.
We do.
Not watches. Not something pretty cool, though.
Something very cool. We might be the first podcast to talk about it.
I think so. Some people say that we're the first podcast to ever talk about these. There you go.
We might be. The funny thing about it is, despite being located in proximity or closer proximity to our buddy Brodinky, we were not the first to receive these awesome Brodinky hats that we're wearing right now. Maybe that's because they got to fly to Colorado or to California and they had to drive to Cincinnati. But, we're both rocking the Brodinky hat tonight. I'll probably take a picture of it, with our faces obscured because it's awesome. Buzzy, I'm not going to lie. You kind of look like an umpire.
Thanks.
I don't know if that's a compliment or not, but like, you look like an umpire a bit.
This is what my job is, calling strikes and calling balls and saying, you're out.
Make Buzzy the official Brodinky umpire.
Yeah. No, maybe that dope umpire fit is because these are a snapback mm-hmm. Automatic reload. And mine is on the absolute last.
Don't know how that's possible. Considering... that mine has 4 left and you and I are different sizes, but not overly different.
Like, no,
we're roughly the same height mm-hmm. and our wrists are not terribly far apart. Maybe a link here or there and a little bit of a micro adjust. Not different, but Good God, man.
Got a lot of skull. I'm not sure how much brain is inside said skull, but yeah, still works though. Don't have to bust out the extendo. I'm sure somebody makes like some sort of snap hat extendo adapter. You know,
they have to. I mean, I can remember. So I was at a baseball camp over the summer once in high school. And the guy who was on our team, you know, that they had us kind of set up with, first baseman, bigger guy, not huge, huge, not like a wide, but like he's probably 6'3", you know, normal first base size.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I've met guys who are 6'3", you know, that wear like a size 7.5 hat, you know, so it's, you know, 7 7/8 or whatever. This guy wore an 8.5, and we were like, everybody on our team just marveled at it. We were like, how do you even find it? Because I have to custom order them. I'm like, holy cow, 8.5. That's so big.
Size.
Anyway. Yeah. Yes, yeah. We're rocking the Brobinky hats.
Thank you, bro. These are
Thank you very much, sweet. Bro.
They turned out awesome too.
They really did.
Stitching stead on. And just in case we ever, if I ever run into someone in the wild that's like, hey, cool Brodinky hat, I know I will have made a great friend.
This is true. This is true. So yeah, those are our new additions. Drink check, wrist check. Fresh form finds, Buzzy, be fast.
Okay.
What do we got?
Get onto the forum known as Watch You Seek, because you might be seeking an Oris Diver 65.
Ooh.
Biko. However you're supposed to say that. You got any? I'm the umpire, so I can't call my own strike or ball on the pronunciation. Do you know the correct pronunciations?
Are you appealing to instant replay like they do now? Am I instant replay umpire now?
Yeah, we're going to New York on this one.
I'm gonna go with Biko.
Yeah, I think Biko makes more sense. Biko.
Yeah, we'll go with that.
Yeah, the long.
Does it have the bracelet on this one or not?
It does. It does have the bracelet for 1,250 smackaroos. As long as you're getting, it's the blue, the gorgeous, gorgeous blue. It has the Perlon strap that came with it. Also includes box and papers. I believe he purchased it from Topper.
There you go.
And the poster has more posts than what he wants for this watch. So like if one post was $1, he's actually made 1,299 posts on Watch You Seek.
Okay. And he only wants 1,250.
Yeah.
Do you think he'll take posts instead of dollars?
I would just start slinging posts right now just to get ahead, just in case he bites. Yeah. But yeah, so this guy's been around for a while, so that'd be interesting. It's really it's a cool one. It's funny how many times after we are done recording, been like, you know, we were talking about that bronze watch earlier. Yeah, Biko would be kind of cool.
Yes, that happens regularly.
I do say that quite a bit.
You do.
So this one seems like a great deal for a lightly used one. To me, the blue dial is the one to get. So that's what I found. It was fresh, it was fast, and it was a find. It was on the forum for once, not eBay, not anywhere else.
So I'm going to break my own rule and go to Chrono 24. And that's because I've been reacquainted with Chrono 24 recently. Not like reacquainted, like started. I was at a point in my collection where, and we talked about this, trying to find a fresh form find for me was difficult, mainly because I wasn't really surfing watch recon. I wasn't out on Chrono 24, wasn't on eBay for a while. I was in a good spot, like enough watches, not really looking, probably too many watches, the idea of consolidate, like just any of those things. But
then Chrono 24 was like, allow me to reintroduce myself?
Well, there are a couple things going on, you know, obviously, like we talked about earlier. And, you know, you're like, maybe it's time to mark an occasion. So you start just kicking around ideas. And I'm going to call this, in a weird way, the one that got away. But this one is at a slightly better price than our friends over at RMP would have been able to do, mainly because they're an Omega dealer. Yeah, you like that? Because this is a 2019 production watch. And it also came out after 2006. So, you know, after Daniel, we're good. It is an Omega Constellation with the kind of white textured dial or silver textured dial, rose gold, or yes, it's an Omega. So Sedna gold hands and hour markers with a steel bezel, with a coaxial movement on Chrono 24 from a dealer in the United States in Iowa, box and papers, $3,400. This watch retails right around six.
Yeah.
Pretty stonking good deal there. And the condition is brand new. So somehow this ended up, I'm not going to ask questions, but 2019 year of production, it's pretty compelling. It's pretty compelling. I'm not going to lie. But yeah, you know,
that
10 atmospheres of water resistance, 60 hour power reserve, 38 millimeter case diameter. Sounds very similar to the watch that I am currently wearing. Just this one's not a chronograph. Just going to leave that right there for, let's be real, for myself, because I am one of the very, I don't want to say few people, like there are people who like the Constellation, but I have a weird obsession with it that I have not found anywhere in the watch community yet. None of the other Constellation people have been like, hey, look at that. I guess maybe me and RJ Brewer, but he's not in the States. But, you know, I know he's a big fan of the Constellation Double Eagle, the Manhattan, whatever you call it. And RJ, we got space, I guess.
Transnational Connie gang. That's what it is.
Mm-hmm.
International conspiracy of constellations. Yes.
So there's that. We'll talk about a little bit more on that. We'll touch a little bit more on that topic here in a bit. But our friend John Ferrer of Brew Watches has been teasing some stuff lately. And it wasn't us who sent him that specific direct message about doing a podcast episode. I sent him a different one, phrased differently. That's how, but like, so I'm feeling John's going to be on a few podcasts here in the next few weeks. But the teaser shots of his next watch are interesting and not in a bad way. I am very intrigued. So from what I can tell, chronograph, obviously, similar, not the same, bracelet to the Retromatic. So it's got that like flat link with the flare out at the case. But it has a new trifold double push button clasp instead of butterfly. So maybe a little bit sportier, a little bit less dressy. The bezel, like that whole assembly by the chronograph pusher that he's like been kind of highlighting just looks fantastic. It looks like a kind of a unique, not, I mean, there's, to me, there's hints of Nautilus in there, but not a ton by any means. Like it just looks like a really cool case shape. And I know, yeah, I'm invoking Nautilus. So like, there you go. But there was one teaser photo that was kind of blurred that looked like there were two blue subdials and a blue either tack or minute track around, which was really neat. And not like a navy, but like a bright, like a bright cerulean blue, if that's the right color. I don't know if that's the right color, but you know what I'm talking about? Like a really bright blue.
Yeah, you got to step really up to cool. The 64 pack of crayons.
Exactly. So maybe even 128. Maybe even 128. I know John, big brain design, could even be 128. Detailing on the dial was obviously obscured because it was a teaser, but this thing looks interesting. And I think we'll get an idea of what it might look like here in a few weeks from what he's been kind of hinting at, not just to us, just like on in general. So I am, I'm very excited.
Yeah, it must get... Excellence is just a wonderful thing. And John makes excellent watches. The fact that, you know, his designs are wholly his. They, you know, he takes inspiration from the coffee machines and such, but yeah, nothing else out there looks like them. They're gorgeous. He plays with colors so well. Yeah, I can't wait. I can't wait. And I'm also a little bummed that I slept on the Notre Dame colorway Retromatic because of the sold out. Womp womp. The green Retromatic is the one that is still available on the website. But
so you're not going to go with the green jerseys version, Buzz? Just saying.
Yeah, that's a hangover from the Weiss years, you know, which is a hangover from earlier. But the green's awesome. Also, I mean, to me, that's 1B. The ND colorway was 1A. Yeah, I can't wait to see this thing. Yeah, I just don't know how he does it. Does everything so great. But I'm just looking at a teaser shot on his story that is kind of like the watch on its side, kind of looking at kind of an oblique angle, which I always like. To me, that highlights the cool things going on with the case and bracelet. And yeah, just looks like a stunner. Can't wait to see this thing.
Yeah, it looks, I'm excited to say the least. And yeah, I'm sure we'll have John on. He's semi agreed to come on the show. We haven't really ironed out details, but he's got a timeline, and I think our episode could fit on that timeline. So I'm excited to talk to him about it. Just curious to kind of see what comes next. And I mean, white with blue subdials, that works. I kind of want to see where he's going with the design. But the other thing too is it looks like I see two subdials. I couldn't quite make out a third, which is interesting to me, or at least a third blue one, which from that angle you'd think you'd at least catch a hint of it. So there's always something going on. So I'm really curious as to what this turns out to be. So yeah, very, very, hopefully very exciting things from John over at Brew coming up soon. Anyway, so that was fun. Yeah, the teasers. I think we talked about it last time we had him on. That bracelet just tends to work with his case shape.
Big time.
It just abs, like, I've never once thought about taking my burgundy Retromatic off of that bracelet. I don't think I ever will. The only time I took it off was to size it because it's just easier. And then I put it right back on. Word to the wise, sizing the bracelet is easier if it's not on the watch. Other than that, it's been on that bracelet.
All right.
Shall we move to the kind of final, like, this is going to be a briefer episode because there's no guest, there's no Spangler. You know, we're just kind of chewing the fat here for a bit.
That's right. So
the last thing that we kind of wanted to talk about a little bit, and we'll probably touch on this in a couple later episodes as well, is the idea of a milestone watch. So obviously I'm talking about just starting a new job today. Talked about in the past when we've gone over the collection, that, you know, I've got a watch for each of my boys, kind of fitting a certain criteria with their births and, you know, watches that I hope to pass down to them. And when they reach whatever age I decide they need to be, could actually be different ages for the two of them, depending on their personalities. You never know.
Good point.
You know, the whole concept of that, I know some people like that concept. A lot of us have gotten into the hobby based on that concept or based on being handed down a watch or something like that. So it's kind of interesting. And Buzzy, I want to get your take on that. I mean, what are your thoughts on the idea of a purchase like this to mark an occasion? It doesn't have to be, you know, momentous, but just something to say, hey, you know, something, this happened. I'm going to celebrate with whatever amount. I'm going to do that so that I have a reminder. But, you know, we're in the, obviously in this space. Some people it's a bottle of bourbon. Some people it's something else. I mean, there's the idea of a milestone piece, but for the we'll just stick with the episode because this is mainly a watches podcast. What do you think? What do you think of the concept of a milestone purchase?
Well, obviously it's a great excuse to buy something.
That's true.
And depending on what you're buying, when you start to spend a certain amount on watches, purchasing said watch is inherently a milestone. Okay. You can't tell me that if you are buying something that, you know, kind of in the $3,000, $5,000 and up, there's a certain point where you're spending a chunk of money that no matter how much money you normally make, how much money you normally spend, it's what you are spending is a significant fraction. Remember, fractions can be greater than one of the money that you would typically be spending, in your just kind of day to day life. So, I mean, I would argue that something, a big purchase, is inherently a milestone. Right, buying a car is inherently a milestone, even though, I mean, yeah, you're putting some money down, but it's really the milestone of signing up for Book of the Month club for most of us non-Dave Ramsey's
Age of the Month club.
Yeah, most of us schlubs out there are stroking off checks every month for our cars, but. Yeah, it's inherently a milestone, so why not tie it to something fun? I think that's a perfectly good excuse. Because the other thing is, even if you're not spending a ton, I think back to some of the pieces that I bought kind of my first time around in the hobby, Breitling Colt chronograph, I remember. It was the most expensive thing I bought to that point. In the grand scheme of things, it's not really that much, but it was back then to me. And I remember spending a ton of time, asking questions and such to the seller. I finally said, "Hey, let's just get on the phone. Let's talk real quick." He wanted to have me pay by wire. And I just want to,
actually talk to a real human.
and we just had a hell of a great conversation. I think actually we're still connected on LinkedIn. There's another young guy who's down in Florida. I think he still is. We just had a hell of a great time talking watches and travel and all of that. Like, oh man, that. Yeah, absolutely. I'm gonna swing by the bank tomorrow on my lunch break. We'll knock this wire out. Let's get this transaction made. So, I'll always remember that completely fun, random, hour and a half conversation over a couple of whiskeys, with this guy. So. The whole concept passes muster, whether it's an external milestone like the birth of a kid or a new job, birthday, getting married, or just kind of an internal milestone to picked up my first mechanical chronograph or, things like that.
Yeah. I mean, the purchase of the timepiece can even in and of itself be a bit of a milestone. I will say that depending on the situation, because you mentioned cars, the watch buying experience is significantly better than the car buying experience. Although the car buying experience is getting better, I'll say it's getting better. But God, the watch buying experience is significantly better than the car buying experience.
It is typically less adversarial. The fact that you, Yeah. Shower me with all your hate, acolytes of Dave Ramsey. But, you know, most of us schlubs will finance. So, yeah, you have that whole adversarial process, of that sort of stuff. Yeah, car buying does kind of suck because even if you've done a good job. Actually, so here's the thing. a funny thing with really any sort of purchase that is open to haggling is if you're miserable by the time you've done the deal, you feel like you still might have been able to get something out of them, you probably exhausted all of your options. You probably got about the best possible deal. If you are happy as a clam with that process, you probably got taken for a ride. I guess maybe it's not a bad thing that buying cars is a pain in the rear for the old buzz man, because it just means I'm savvy.
We'll stick with that. Yeah. I will say the process for, and I really wish we had time to talk about this with our friends down in Australia, because we didn't get to talk about the fact that I drive a Chevy, but it's not really a Chevy. It's a Holden.
Crikey.
Yes, exactly. One of those Chevys that got imported from Australia. So my car was built further from where I live than I've ever been. But when you go to the dealership and you ask them, hey, can I see the SS? And they're like, oh yeah, which one? This one, this one, this one, this one. I was like, no, not the Camaro SS. I want to see just the SS. Wait, which one's that? Like when you walk it's like the Brodinky meme. When you walk into the jewelry store and you're like, I want to see this. And you're like, this, no. I know more about this than you. Please go away.
Yeah.
It was like that at the dealership when I went and bought my car. Going on 5 years ago. Now, yeah, it was essentially the Ron Swanson moment. Like,
I know more than you.
It was so far away. They had two of them. It was so far away on the lot here at King's Auto Mall that like they had to, like they couldn't find it. Like there was one, they're like, I know we've got it. I've got the keys. I don't remember where we parked it. Like they had to move seven cars to get it out because nobody in the greater Cincinnati area really knew what it was, nor did they, you know. And it's funny. Including the salesman that I bought it from. The funniest part about it is, and I don't know what watch to equate it to, but like, you know how every once in a while somebody, like you're wearing something, and maybe it is even like a Doxis. Like you look at it and they're like that's not like, that's a sweet watch, and they can rattle off what it is. Like, oh, you know your stuff. Every once in a while when I'm at a red light, I'll get a nod from somebody in one of those other kind of cars. It's like the, if you know, you know, car. It's like, this person gets it. There's another guy, and I've seen him a couple of times. And there was one time I was actually able to pull up alongside him, and I've seen three of them in the greater Cincinnati area, three Chevy SSs, and then one Pontiac G8 GXP, which was the previous version back when Pontiac existed. That was right. The old Holden that they imported. That and the new GTO that they did in the early to mid 2000s. I pulled up alongside of this guy at a light, and he has a vanity plate because he has his SS in jungle green. So his license plate is jungle green. And I pulled up alongside of him, and we didn't just wave. Like we had like a whole like little moment there before he turned and I went straight. But it was just, it was great. It's like kind of the ultimate insiders type of thing. And I don't know exactly what watch that is, because it's not a white dial Daytona, I'll tell you that.
Fun fact, I once test drove a used GOAT, a new GTO, obviously not the one from the 60s. The salesman went by Coach, and as a as a fellow nickname guy, I was like so pumped. I really
buzzing Coach test driving the GOAT.
Yeah, yeah. It was big fun. The man. I really there are times when I went went back to that mentally and just like, oh man, maybe I should have bought it. Like, it's just it's too darn good, you know?
Just that whole experience right there. So, Buzzy, we talked a little bit about, we're kind of setting something up here, and I don't really know where this is going to go. But if I was so inclined to pick up a milestone watch to mark this little milestone that I had happen today, or technically it's been in the making for a bit, you could say, because people don't just change jobs on a certain day. Like this point in my career, like there was a lot of, I don't want to say soul searching, but it was a big transition.
But happens gradually then all at once, right?
It does. Yeah. And it's weird because, you know, the whole working remote environment is still kind of going on with everything. Like, I literally was working for my prior employer on Friday, and then today I'm working for my new employer. And first days are awkward, especially in a virtual environment. And this isn't to say that it didn't go well. I was very impressed with the virtual onboarding process. Just, it's different. It's new. It's different. You're the new guy. And I came from a place where, in a weird way, after having been there for 6 years, because of the tenure of the folks there, I was still the new guy. But I was a new guy who knew a lot more than most new guys. So it's just different. You're right. It happens gradually and then all at once, especially when you don't take any time off. Yeah. Especially when you don't take any time off, between the two, like a weekend, not even a long one. So that is what it is. So, If I was so inclined, you know my taste. I feel like there's also been, in fairness to those listening, Buzz may have been doing some homework, because there may have been a couple of group chats that this topic has been covered. Nothing's been picked up. Nothing's even on the radar-ish. But so, Buzzy, what have you got for me?
Just for those playing along at home, there's always group chats. It's not just like there's specific ones for this.
Oh, yeah.
It's the only constant.
There's just always group chats. I think this has been brought up in at least two, if not three. You're a member of at least both of them.
Yeah. My wife once was like, I was saying something about like, oh, you know, Spence had a funny joke, and, you know, Brodinky, you know, chimed in or something. And she's like, how often do you talk to those guys? Like, every couple of days? I'm like, no, like far more than that.
Far more than that.
What do you talk about? Like, whatever we want.
It's like, I guess it's like, in a weird way, it's almost like, it's like constantly, and I would imagine most of our listeners are probably the same way. You have a group chat with some friends that are related in a specific way. So like for us, this one is watches, but it's like, well, I guess watches and watch memes. the one with bro, like, it's like being able to go out drinking with those guys on a regular basis. It's just slowly, and no one's really intoxicated. Sometimes we are, depending on the week, the weekday and the hour. But like, you know, it's like everyone's, it's like just a slow, long, drawn out conversation about whatever random stuff happens, which is fun. It is.
Okay. So back from that tangent. So my initial assumption, I have three options for you. My starting assumption, knowing your collection, knowing you, I would say you have, scare quotes here, too many Divers and Chronos. By that, I mean your collection is overweighted in the Diver and Chronograph space. And
Chronos has been a recent development, though. I'll agree with you, but Chronos has been a recent development.
Doesn't matter whether it happened yesterday or 20 years ago, the state of your collection as it currently sits has more than enough, and not just quantity. You got some cool stuff, right? Any reasonable person would be really happy with what you've got. If they aren't, they're not reasonable. They suck. Okay. Sorry for the swears. Anywho.
Check explicit.
That's right. So that being said, I think that you need something that is not a Diver slash Chrono. And I think that it's these are something you don't really have a flex watch in the term of like flexing on people. So
I used to.
Yeah, no kidding. No kidding. Door one, something integrated bracelet-y, expensive-ish, but not like in the greater watch world expensive. This would be Oris PPX or a Zenith Defy. We got exotic, relatively speaking, materials with the titanium. I know the Defy even had some ceramics, if that does anything for you. Mm-hmm. Unique designs, with the open worked movement on the PPX. That this is so both of those are things that I know that you like aesthetically, but also, you have nothing like those in your current collection.
So are we talking just the straight-up Zenith Defy, or are we talking the Zenith Defy El Primero? Because that's also been brought up in some conversations, which a 1/100th of a second chrono, despite being a chrono, it only keeps track of up to 30 minutes. It's not overly useful, but it's a crazy flex. Party piece where it goes, woo!
It's yet another flex. It's flexception. It's a flex within a flex. All right. So that's option one.
Okay.
And those are things that are, to me, those are things that we've definitely been talking about. Nothing's earth shattering there.
Well, and what I'll say too is, if you look at the majority of my collection, with the exception of potentially my Oris, which, despite being, we've talked about kind of a Swiss independent watch for the everyman, my Oris I wouldn't necessarily call everyday wear with the bronze Fratelloris. As much as I love that, that's kind of not an only watch. Like it couldn't be a one watch collection. I look at a good chunk of the rest of my collection and you're like, I could wear that every day. That could be an everyday watch in most situations, maybe a little thick under a sleeve, maybe a little, but like in theory, you could probably pull that off any day of the week. The Oris is kind of my one exception. So you're right. Both of these would kind of be like, that's not an everyday watch, but man, that's a killer piece. Like, so I'm with you there. I'm with you.
All right. Next. So door number two is also flexing, but more up the jewelry aisle. Okay. So like a Cartier Santos. Or a Bulgari Octo.
You're going up a little bit. Well, I guess from the other two, you're not really going up in price, but you're close. Pre-owned, those are a little bit of step up from the other two. But yes, no, you're not wrong.
Yeah. Yeah, I know that you have a special soft spot for the Santos. And everybody theoretically likes the Bulgari Octo, despite the fact that so few of us have ever gotten a handle one.
I have, though.
Well, I know you have.
Yes. The weird thing about that is as much as I absolutely love that design, as much as it is, I think if hard pressed to say which one would you wear more between the two, I feel like I'd go Cartier. Mm-hmm. Because it is a more classic design. Not to say that the Bulgari is not a future classic, because that design is absolutely killer. And I would, as much as everyone's like, oh man, the titanium, the way to wear it is the lightweight one that's hardly there. It's like, no, I'd go steel because of the added durability and the added water resistance, just a little bit more. The GMT Chrono, if you're talking like that is up there in price, but like, that GMT, like you're talking about a world record setter right there, which is, you want to talk about a flex piece. That's a flex. But I, as much as I love it, and it doesn't, like I've tried it on, it wears amazingly well, looks great on, even on my wrist, which isn't, 7 inches is about average, according to Mark Cho, from what I remember from a couple weeks, from last week. It's one of those where I'm like, could I, like, I'd hesitate. It's as much as I love that watch, I'd look at it and be like, oh, is this me? Whereas the Cartier, even though that isn't even like my new role, I'm working remotely 90% of the time, probably. So it's like, I wear whatever I want, whenever I want, but it's like, both of those are interesting. Cause like, I absolutely love both of them, but you're like, would I wear them or would I grab my Notice?
Well,
another great watch.
It depends. It depends how much you want to flex on everyone.
Exactly. Hashtag Salmon Squad.
Yeah. All right. Last door. And I kind of have a 3A and a 3B on this, okay, because this did pop up a little while ago and I think it fell a little flat, but I didn't really present you the whole idea. The whole idea for 3A is a new Mousse de Cartier in whichever colorway you like the most and a jet ski. Put your Nimitz class SUV to work, make it haul something besides you guys. Make it do some work. Just because you can't ride it in the pond near your house doesn't mean you can't drive 20 minutes to the nearest lake and enjoy the one thing that will always pick you up no matter how bad your life is going. I forgot which comedian pointed it out. You've never seen someone sat on a jet ski.
This is true. My parents had one when I was growing up, which in a weird way, I sort of forced their hand on buying.
Wow.
It's a weird story. There was a promise made about a certain number of grades through junior high. Yes, my parents bought a jet ski because of my junior high grades. I was a very lucky child. I'm not. But still, the weird thing here was the fact that my parents thought they got out of it because I got – like I missed it by one, but – they, when you roll them all together with the grading periods, it averaged out to above. So they're like, I was like, hey, here we go. And it happened. So I had one through high school, and you're right. There was never a dull moment, on the jet ski, never a frown, unless I can tell you, and in fairness, I wasn't on the jet ski. So Buzzy, you've never been to the house that I grew up in. It's on a creek that goes to the St. Joe River in Mishawaka. Mm-hmm. You're familiar with it. And it's above the dam in Mishawaka, which means it's kind of like it's not a true lake, but it's wider. There's a channel where it's significantly deeper. And then there's an area where it was a floodplain that is now 15 feet flooded because of the dam. So there was some farmland that went under. But the creek by where my parents' house was, it was narrow and then it widened out. And when I was 10, I can distinctly remember a storm that flooded basements, all that kind of stuff. And the creek was running like a rapids behind my grandparents' house. Grandpa knows because he listens, but I grew up next door to my grandparents. And their neighbors across the creek, not across the street, didn't have a seawall, ripped a ton of tree across the creek into my grandparents' backyard. Thank God, no damage. But where my parents' house was, it widened, and all, as we all know, is water. It slowed down, dropped a bunch of sediment. So we went from having 2 to 3 feet behind my parents' house to about 8 to 12 inches. So essentially the boat we had went, you know, all that kind of stuff. You could get a jet ski in, but you had to get collapsible oars to paddle out. If you got too aggressive before, like if you could get out past, you know, may he rest in peace, Mac Willingham's house. Nobody knows where that is because he doesn't own it anymore. You get out past it, you can start it up, no problem. But even still, there's some tall seaweed. And if you know about impellers and seaweed, they don't mix. And the suction grate. So the only time I've ever not been smiling on a jet ski is when I had to get into the creek to clear out the suction grate. But then technically, according to Buzz, I wasn't on said jet ski. I was
exactly
in the water near said jet ski. So I wasn't smiling, but I wasn't on it. So that's fine.
You were jet ski adjacent. I think we
had that all the way through college too. I feel like I have to ask, I feel like it survived long enough for my wife and I to have been on it at least once. Not very often, but at least once.
That being said, I do think a little less of you for knowing that you were a pay-to-play sort of scholar growing up.
Oh, I wasn't? It was just a weird benefit.
Okay.
I found that loophole. Told you. I thought I'd gone. I was like, well, hold on a sec here. Hold on a sec. Let's look.
Time out. Yeah. Well, cool. If that didn't land, 3B is embrace your inner Panerai D-bag.
Ooh.
And just get a Panerai. Another great flex watch. Another thing unlike anything that you have.
This is true.
But the only problem then is both you and Spangler would have one.
And is there enough room for two Panerai D-bags on this show?
Well, his is arguably more interesting than yours because of the left-hand drive, and his grandpa bought it.
Yeah, talk about that's tough.
We all sitting around the table. Let's see Evan Spangler's Panerai.
Yeah, yeah.
Subtle left-handed drive.
That's true. However, I could one-up him by being an even bigger Panerai D-bag, by also being a better Jubilee evangelist than him, by putting mine on a Jubilee, which he has yet to do.
Yeah.
And he's not here to defend himself as to why he hasn't sprung for the $30 Jubilee for his Panerai. Come on, Spangler. We should all be able to do that. Let's do that. The other two, the two that I'm surprised you haven't gone with, because this isn't a group text, but one of the other text chains that I have with our hopefully by the end of August, soon to be four-time guest, he's going to give Brodinky a run for his money, our buddy Mike Stockton. We also need to get, let's be real, we need to get RJ on the show. And we've talked about it. I don't think there's an issue with it. We just haven't actually officially asked him yet.
Yes.
So we need to get RJ on the show just because he's a great guy. Mike has talked about two-tone or gold, which is not anything I have, which has come up. And then also vintage. I keep hesitating on vintage pieces. And, you know, we talked with our buddy at More Watches quite a bit about vintage Rolex. We dove into that a little bit on, you know, if you're trying to get a birth year watch, where would you start? What's still affordable? Those types of things. You know, there's we have our other buddy Dustin, who's a big fan of the independent. So he's like, what about a Hobbring Doppelchrono? What about a Hobbring Deadbeat Second? What about, you know, unfortunately, the one, my favorite Moser is the one that Collective did. So like that, kind of missed that boat / you know, whatever. But there's a bunch of different avenues to go down. And it's just like, I'm in that point almost where I was before our oldest was born. So in a weird way, I'm back to the beginning where it's like, okay, I have this collection. I'm trying to find something that fits. I'm trying to find something that I don't have. And I don't want to say it's the analysis paralysis that goes along with it, but you're trying to make that decision as if it has to fit in this other piece, but it's almost like it's your first purchase again. Mm-hmm. It's not one of those, oh, I like this one. And that's the weird thing, is I'm to the point where there's a couple of things that have been out for a while. There isn't much new that is speaking to me to a degree. There's some newer ones that I really like. That's a conversation for a different episode. We'll get there eventually. But it's like the whole, okay, what direction do you want to go in? And there's three or four different avenues. Like you said, there's the integrated bracelet sports. There's the kind of like the flex piece. Let's be real. I don't even want to call a Santos or a Bulgari jewelry pieces, because they are unbelievable pieces. The Santos is modeled after the original pilot's watch.
Well, it's not a pejorative term to call
right.
It
no, I know.
It's that it's the attention to detail, and by both of those are made by, you know, purveyors of fine jewelry that just so happen to do a darn good job at watches.
Yeah.
Also.
So, yeah. It's an interesting,
interesting juxtaposition of all these different things. And the one other weird thing, and we'll talk about this a little bit, the one that keeps coming back in my head is the new Speedmaster. It is similar to what I own. It is a stainless steel sports watch. I am a space nerd. And the whole, and we've talked about this, the whole concept of the Speedy is, I just hesitate because it seems like it's one that you can always just go and acquire. You can go get the previous one. You can go get the new one. You can go get a vintage one. And if you look for the right thing, you can end up happy. And the reason I've struggled with it is I always feel like there's an excuse not to get one, but I also feel like what's the excuse to get one? Absolutely love the design. It's probably one of the first watches I recognized anywhere because of the movie Apollo 13. There are plenty of good close-ups of it. I've got, holy cow, on my onboarding today, somebody asked me about the Lego Saturn V rocket I have on display in my my background in my office intentionally. That rocket is in there intentionally. And yes, I have it displayed in the three stages. That's how big of a nerd I am. I don't even just have it put together. I have it displayed in the three stages. So it makes a lot of sense, but you're kind of like, I hesitate because it's like, is that watch the watch? Is this the excuse to buy that one, or is that watch the watch to mark the occasion? If you ask one versus the other, it depends on how you phrase the question. And I think that's where I'm struggling. It fits amazing, by the way. I've both tried the Hesalite and the Sapphire version on recently. They're absolutely amazing. And I tried the old version on. The new one is significantly better wearing than the old one. Just the way they did the end links. Just the end links are actually shorter than the lugs. It just drapes down perfectly. So this isn't a knock on the Speedy at all. It's just, everyone talks about you should own a Speedy. Every watch collector has to own a Speedy at some point. And that's the other thing is like, it's the same thing with any type of a Rolex. Like the whole Rolex phenomenon right now, it's like, oh, you're marking a milestone in your career. You get a Rolex for that. It's like, yeah, but maybe 5 years ago, that was the thing you did. Like now it's such a hype watch that do I like them? Absolutely. There's several models that I'm interested in, but one, is it really marking the occasion if I started a new job today and I'll get a new, I could get the one that I want in 12 months? Does that really mark the occasion? 6 months? You know, it's a weird disconnect. It's like I'm marking the occasion by getting on a list to get this in 12 to 15 months. It's like that's not the same thing. So I like all of your ideas.
And in 12 to 15 months, is that the watch, or is that just the wait list for the bracelet for the watch?
This is
black pill.
See, black pill. He's got it. Yeah.
All right. Lots of things to think about, buddy.
Yeah. A ton of things to think about. We'll see. I'll keep everybody posted. Y'all know if I have a new watch alert, eventually, maybe not right away. Maybe I'll keep it to myself for a bit. Maybe I won't even tell the group. The group text will know. Let's be real. They'll know. They'll know before I end up with it.
It's true.
They always do. They always do. Right. Well, that was we managed to find a way to make it all the way there. We didn't think we'd do it, but we did it.
We did. Amazing.
At this point, Spangler could have joined us.
He could have.
Well,
that's why he's second co-host chair.
Like I said, I think you've been on more episodes than him. Perfect attendance, baby. And on that note, we'll see y'all next week.
See ya.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Whiskey and Watches podcast. If you like what you hear, please take the time to rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts. We are enthusiasts, not experts, so don't at us. But you can find us on Instagram at whiskey.and.watches.podcast. Also, visit our website at ZeitzWatches.com. Zeitz is spelled Z-E-I-T-Z.